If you are a teacher, parent, administrator, student, and or anyone who loves reconnecting children with nature, and you want to figure out how to cultivate learning gardens and nature-based curriculum, then this is the podcast, the Outdoor Classrooms Podcast. My name is Victoria Hackett. I am the founder of OutdoorClassrooms.com and the Secret Gardens Nature Classes. I love witnessing the magic that happens when children are playfully learning outdoors. Observing the return of wonder and curiosity when children are interacting with nature is pure magic. This is the podcast that is going to help you capture children's interest and give you not only inspiration, but some real life strategies that are going to help you figure out how to use the outdoor space, your outdoor space, as a teaching tool, so you can enlighten the playful learning experience for young children. Welcome to our Outdoor Classrooms community. Hello, everybody. We are here with another Outdoor Classrooms tour and talk. I want to welcome Madeline, is it Braden and Andrew?
Yes. Brown?
Welcome, welcome. They are from the Barefoot University. And welcome. So we're going to dive right in. So for those of you who are listening to this podcast, this is an Outdoor Classrooms tour and talk, which means that we are going to be looking at an absolutely incredible and inspiring images and pictures of their Barefoot University Forest School. And that can be found in our Circle membership. So head on over there and find out what that's all about. But let's get started. Welcome, welcome.
Hey, thank you for having us.
Absolutely. So where should we start? There's so much to talk about. So can you just tell us, again, both of you, tell us a little bit about yourself and where you're from, and so we get a little bit of a backstory before we jump into Barefoot University.
Sure. Go ahead. Hey, I am Amber. I'm actually from Texas, but we relocated to just north of the Smokies about 3 years ago. So now we're living in East Tennessee. I have four kids from 9 to 22, so all the ages. And we've been homeschooling, we've private schooled, we public schooled, we've done all the things before finding our niche, which brings us to today.
I'm Madeline. I am from Northern Oklahoma originally, but live in DFW now. I have one kid, don't have four, but Amber's kids are like my kids too. So He is 12 and we have always homeschooled, and Amber and I kind of homeschool the same way, which makes things really easy because we have the same philosophies on how we do stuff and how we want to raise our kids.
I guess that kind of pulls us into, you're both homeschoolers and you found each other. And can you tell us the story about kind of how you met and the birth of this idea of, let's do a Barefoot University? There's sort of a
lot. Go ahead. It was you first.
So at that time, I was reading a lot about how kids learn. And I was reading all of these studies about learning outside and what nature can do inside and outside the classroom and all the benefits that have to do with spending time outdoors and how children learn in better and unstructured ways. And so I was just like in love with this new stuff that I was uncovering at the time. And so we started visiting forest schools, and I found there were several. I was in Dallas-Fort Worth at the time. There were several, and there was things that I really loved about each of them, but I was kind of wishing I could piece some things together, and nothing was quite exactly what I was hoping for. And so I put it out there on a homeschooling group in Fort Worth, and I just said, does anybody want to start a forest school with me? And Madeline commented, and we didn't even know each other. So she was like, I do. And so I sent her a message and all it said was, no, I'm serious. And she said, I'm serious too. So the very first time we met was to plan our first semester. And we actually met at this indoor church playground, and we brought all our nature books and we planned out our first semester of forest school, which at the time I was living in Keller. And so it was Keller area forest school. And we were just going to, We said we weren't going to advertise it or whatever, because there was a lot of homeschoolers in that area. We would just tell some friends. And so,
And if it was just us,
we said that, yeah.
Like if it was just the two of us outside with our kids, we were like, this is fun and we like each other. And if it just is us, it's outside.
So it was interesting because we kind of made a commitment that very first time we met each other. that, yeah, if nobody else shows up, we're going to show up and we're going to do this and we're going to teach our kids in this way. And we were going to have a good time doing it, but people crazily showed up. It was amazing.
We went from like 5 families to like 15 families. And then it was like 70 families.
Our first semester. So we're like 3 or 4 months in.
And 70 families with children included turns into like 300 people really quickly and easily. And it was too big. It got too big. And you don't know anybody and you lose that sense of community. And we lost the sense of community that we were hoping to have by making something like that. And so we're like, okay, this is not going to work. It is too big. We need to split the group or we need to figure something else out. And so we split the group and we split it into 2 groups. And we're like, okay, well, we'll still do field trips together, community service events together, and still act as one group, but we'll just be 2 different groups. And then from there, it just kind of splintered on out to more groups and more groups and more groups.
And this is a picture of probably 2 of your leaders, I'm guessing.
Yes, those are our current Texas leaders, Dana and Andrea.
I love the sign. It's just
Dana actually just went on our 5-year leader retreat with us to Seattle. So that was a lot of fun.
So you were giving back to, so you have leaders that are all over the country. How does that work? Can you describe the Barefoot University?
We were giving back to them. We have a handful of leaders who have been with us since the beginning that have been with us and volunteered with us for 5 years. And when you break that down, it's like 180 weeks of volunteer work and of committing to Barefoot and of committing to running these groups and being outside with their kids.
And serving other families.
Yes, very much so. And so we're like, you guys have done this for us. We want to give back to you. Mm-hmm. And so we took everyone to Seattle and it was super fun. And we got to bond with everyone. And when you have, you know, leaders all across the country, we know them, but we don't like get one-on-one time with them. So it was really good to have that one-on-one time.
Yeah.
That's incredible. How did the name Barefoot University come to be? And then I would love to know how you find your leaders and then how you support them.
Sure. So we were Keller Area Forest School. And then
we weren't going to be a thing because we didn't mean to be a thing. Like we didn't set out to make a huge nonprofit, like nationwide organization. That wasn't.
No, that was not the goal.
Very organic.
We moved out of Keller. And so we moved to South Lake and we were like,
keep their shoes on.
Yeah.
So that was part
we're like, well, we can't be Keller Area anymore. And Amber's youngest son never wore shoes. And so he was always barefoot. So we were like, okay, how do we incorporate the two of these? So we were just like, well, we're learning outside. So we'll just be Barefoot University.
I love that. I love that. So then you, all these families, you broke up into different groups.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And so then we were like, okay, we had 70 families at the time. So we just said each of us will take 35. Like when we broke into 2 groups, 35 families go this way, 35 families go this way. And then we had people asking to join and we were like, no, we're full because we wanted our kids to grow up with the community surrounding them and people that we got to spend time with, you know, week after week and getting to know these people and other families and forming relationships and all of those things. And you can't do that with a ton of people, right? Like you need a smaller group. And so we said nobody can join either one of the groups because they were too big. And we had somebody who was like in the group at the beginning who had moved to Colorado and moved back or something like that. And she's like, you know, can I come back? And I'm like, so sorry, we're full. And she's like, well, will you help us start a group? And so we did. Then somebody else wanted us to help them in DFW. And so we did. And we were, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 groups into this. And we're like, okay, I think we're a thing now. So like, if we're going to do this, we're going to do this. So we did. And then that second year, I think we had like 17 groups in Dallas-Fort Worth. And then I moved to Tennessee. And that's really kind of when it took off. So I started a group in Tennessee at that time. It was full before I even got to Tennessee. I actually arrived like the day before forest school kicked off or like 2 days before forest school kicked off and my group was already full and I didn't know anybody. So that was a lot of fun. But my group filled up so fast in East Tennessee that 2 other people had reached out to me in East Tennessee that wanted to start groups that same year. And so we had 3 groups in Tennessee before I even lived there. And I had a friend in Virginia at that time who was pulling her kids out of school that was like, well, I want to do it. And so we let her open a group and then it just kind of spiraled from there. Like,
yeah, incredible.
So all of our leaders are volunteers. We have an interview process that they go through, an application process. They interview, they do background checks. They have to send a video doing like a nature activity or talking about, you know, how they view learning or something like that. And then we check their references, just kind of talk to them for a while to make sure they're a good fit. And after all of that, them and their co-leader, we will open a group. And then they have to go through training a few times a year. There's a bunch of requirements that they have to meet, but they're all volunteers and they all work really hard to get other kids outside, which we love, of course.
So you've got these groups are all around the country. And then how often do they meet? How long during a day do they, is it up to them? Is it, how does it, because they're all homeschoolers, I'm assuming. Mm-hmm.
Yes. So as a volunteer, you get to pick the day of the week and the time and your location that you want to meet. All of our groups meet once a week at the same time. Not the groups meet at the same time, but your group will meet at the same time, at the same place, and the same day of the week, every single week for 36 weeks. We run from September through May, and we like the stability of being at the same park for families. You always know where you are. It gives the kids familiarity meeting at the same park each week. They can explore deeper, and it's great if you're running late on a Monday morning and trying to get kids in the car, you know where to go. So all of our leaders get to pick the day, the time, and location of their groups. Amber and I's groups, because we still lead groups. Our groups meet on Mondays, just because that's when we have always met, Monday morning. But we have groups that meet, some of our East Coast groups meet later in the day because it's colder in the winter there. Some of our like South Texas or Florida groups meet earlier in the morning because it's hotter there. So it just really depends. But most of our groups meet in the morning. People will arrive. We have an opening activity and then we go into our main activity. So it's usually about a 3-hour situation that happens. But most of those 3-hour days turn into 5, 6, 7-hour days where you get there at 10 and you look up and you're like, oh no, it's like 4:30 in the afternoon. We need to go. It's time to leave.
These pictures are amazing. I mean, in terms of all the different environments are completely different.
It has been really, really eye-opening for Amber and I, especially writing this and writing the curriculum that we are using. We have to think about, we have groups in Washington State. We have a group in Arizona. We have groups in Montana, New York State, and Florida, and Tennessee. So it ranges the gambit of ecosystems, age groups, states, and what people are capable of at their parks. All of these parks are different parks. I mean, even within Texas or Tennessee, two parks are completely different, you know? And so when you're writing that, we're trying to keep that in mind a little bit, like, okay, will this work in Billings, Montana, the same way that it will work in Edinburgh, Texas on the border?
And we have groups that literally meet on a beach. We have groups in the swamp, like everything you can think of. So it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a challenge for us, but like a good fun challenge.
Incredible. Well, you both have such incredible contagious energy, which is fantastic. So I can imagine how that just filters into. I'm not surprised that this program has just morphed as it has.
We have a really good time too. Yeah. And Amber and I have fun doing it. And so I think that is really the important part. Like, we have fun and we run about, like, we still have kids that are in forest school and we want our kids to have fun with what we're doing. And we want to have fun as leaders. So I think that we're so incredibly like enmeshed and hands-on in the program ourselves that it really makes a difference.
Every year when we write what we're doing. So we have 5 different rhythms that we kind of go through after the 4 elements. And then we have a rhythm barefoot, which is more traditional for school activities. So this year, our focus is sky. So we're doing rhythm sky and we're going to learn all the sky patterns and weather patterns and flight patterns. That's kind of our theme for the year. But every year when we write our stuff, we're like, this is our favorite year.
Yeah. Every year is our favorite year.
Sometimes we get stuck. We know like, okay, we want this week to be, I don't know, severe weather or something. We know what we want it to be, but we're kind of set. We don't know what to do. So we ask our kids a lot of times and we're like, okay, what do you guys think we should do? We want something to focus on severe weather. How can we do this and make it for school and our kids help us out? And then we have leaders that test out activities every year. So to make sure they're working in different environments and things like that. So it's a lot of fun, but every year we're like, this is my favorite.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and on our leader retreat, that was one of the questions that everybody asked was like, what was your favorite activity that was done?
It was
like,
so
what
was
my favorite activity? It was such a range, such a wide range of stuff that we've done that were people's favorites. Like not one activity was not about it. Like it was wild. And they were like, what is you guys' favorite activity? And we're like, I don't know all of it.
That's incredible. And so what it looks like in the pictures here that the age range is school age. What's the age range? Because you're all homeschooling. It's not going to be one age. It's kind of
We're K through 12. So all we have all ages.
Okay. Yeah.
And we allow younger siblings to come and tag along. So we are really birth through 18. And we have a lot of groups that will have a really good mix of kids. We have some that are teen heavy. We have some that are younger child heavy. So it just kind of depends on the group, but they're all open through high school. So that's also been a lot of fun. And that's actually, because my kids have such a wide age range, my husband and I kids that I kind of see, I've seen that as we've been raising kids, but that's one of my favorite things at work school is just watching the youngest kids interact with the older children and watching how their natural leadership abilities come out, how they learn to communicate with kids of different ages. I really, really love watching that. And my youngest son actually, when we started this, he was like 2, he's 9 now. He kind of made friends with a boy in our original group who was 14 maybe at the time. And the 14-year-old had a younger brother and my son had 3 older siblings, but him and this kid just clicked. And so he would like carry him on hikes and like explain to him how to do the activity and all kinds of stuff. And so it's just really cool to watch those relationships form when there's such a broad age range. That's one of my favorite things.
Well, and you see the older kids will obviously help the younger kids with the activity, but the younger kids also help the older kids kind of get back down to that play, like risk-taking play level that I feel like a lot of them have lost or are losing by not being outside that much. And so they really kind of like pull them back into that play zone, at least for just a couple of hours every week.
And you watch all these things come out like patience and empathy and understanding whenever you're dealing with younger kids. So we see all these sides of these older kids that you don't see when they're not interacting with other people.
Little kids.
Yeah.
We're like of the same breed. I love this.
Well, and also like we are K through 12, but like Amber said, we have younger kids that obviously tag along and the younger siblings kind of have their own friend group. And like do their own thing with like the 2-3-4-year-old. They kind of do their own thing and have their own friend group. And so it's really neat to watch all of these different dynamics happening all in one place, all at the same time.
It's magic.
It is.
That's why you add the outside component, which adds this whole like fairy dust, so to speak, you know, on top of it all. So
it takes the pressure away.
Yeah.
Like being outside takes the pressure away and everybody can just kind of be and be themselves.
Yeah. That's a new term, I think. Fairy dust. It's hard to explain, but these environments, these pictures we've been flashing through the pictures as we've been talking for those that are listening, but it's incredible. I think incredible the age range, the different landscapes that all these programs are in, you creating the curriculum. I think it's incredible to witness. Do you have any specific stories that you would like to share? Experience stories, success stories, or failures, or anything that kind of stands out for you? Like, oh yeah, I'm going to remember that one.
I mean, I feel like every week, every week we meet, there's something like that. I'm trying to think of something that, okay, go ahead. Okay,
so one of my favorite days was in Rhythm Water. And one of ours that year was a little water tray that kids could use to do water testing and things like that. So the activity as it was written was to go on a hike. And on the hike, we were collecting materials to build a beaver dam in the water tray. And then they were going to test it by pouring water into it to see if the dam leaked. And so we did that. And some of the kids, you know, had to make repairs to their dam. And so they fixed it and they rebuilt and they did that a couple times. But it just naturally gravitated to the creek at our park. And then they were like, well, we should build like an actual dam. So then they were building a dam in the creek at our park. And there was this huge log that I still am like, I wasn't paying attention, I guess, because I don't even know how it ended up getting moved, but it was too big for kids to move. So it turned into this whole like physics thing where they ended up moving this huge log to use in their dance. But it was just the kids, like they were problem solving and doing this whole thing on their own. And before we knew it, they had built this, you know, big dam across our creek, and they just did it. That's when we talk about child-led learning and how that expands from like the written activity to what's actually happening at forest school. And we try to tell our families, like, stick around after the activity's over, because that's when the best part happens. The kids do these other amazing things that they wouldn't have the opportunity to do, you know, while things are being structured. It was really cool to watch. And then that turned into a whole thing about, you know, we have to break down the dam. We can't leave it across the creek. And then we got a lesson on leave no trace. And so it just kept going. And that was actually one of my favorite days. It was really cool to watch that whole scenario play out.
I think also just to touch on something that's like that, after forest school is over, that is also, forest school is magical, but there is a magic that happens with the adults that I don't think people really like take into account how important it is as an adult to also be outside in the woods with your friends. And being at forest school, like kids will say, we hear people all the time that are like, oh my gosh, my kids say that it's their favorite day of the week, but it's my favorite day of the week.
We do.
Because I get to be out in the woods with my friends as well. And
we have grandparents that bring them their grandchildren. We have dads. We have a lot of dads that are involved. And so that's also a really fun dynamic, because now we're like multi-generational in a lot of our groups. And it's really fun to see that. And when dads are there, they bring a whole different dynamic to what the activity is. So it's a lot of fun.
So do the parents come with their kids and they stay for that time? So it's a whole, the whole intergenerational.
Because our goal is community. And so really to have those close relationships that everybody desires and needs, right? Like you need the whole family. And so, yes, parents are there. They're technically the ones that are responsible for their children's education because they chose to homeschool. And so we want them involved in that. Because we are child-led, our activities are really written in a way that's more like an invitation to learn for the kids. And here's what we have. And some are really open-ended. Like last year in Rhythm Barefoot, we had a couple that were like, okay, this is what you have. Like, what can you do with it? And so we just let their creativity really take root. And others are a little more scientific where there's like a way to do it, but we still try to present it as an invitation to the kids. Or what do you think we're going to make with these things? Or like, how can we make this work with these things? And so, you know, some kids will just be like not into it and they want to go climb a tree, and that is fine. As long as their parents are okay with it, they can do that. We're not going to make everybody sit down at the table or in a circle and complete this science lesson. But a lot of times those same kids that want to wander off or want to climb a tree or not really interested in the topic that day, they kind of make their way back because they see all the other kids or they see parents doing it. And so that's also really cool because actually we have an example like that. Every single week at forest school, the kids end up making shelters. In our original group, it was just what they did. At some point during our day, they would build shelters. But on the day where shelter building was the actual activity, we were going to learn different types of shelters. Not one child wanted to build a shelter that day.
Of course, that's the way to go, right?
Okay. So we got to our classroom and they just kind of scattered and we're like, well, what do we do? And so Madeline and I, we were leading together at that time. And so we were like, well, we'll build a shelter. So we started building a shelter, and then some parents were like building shelters with us. And so it was like the parents like all standing there building this, you know, A-frame and different tile shelters, and then the kids were watching this unfold and from the woods, like
doing their own thing.
And then little, like one by one, they started kind of trickling in, and they're like, well, can we help build a shelter? So then like now everybody's building a shelter. So it was really, that was a really good thing.
And it's so organic. I mean, that's what I think we speak the same language, because I also use the term invitations for learning and you know, child led and just allow it. And it's a choice if the child wants to come or not, and there's that freedom because you are outside that you can, they can choose to come when they're ready. And I love that it's just the, you have the families there that, and the adults there that are playing as well and modeling that play for children. So everybody's playfully learning. So can you, there must be some challenges in terms of that come up. There's always something that comes up. How do you manage that? How does that?
Well, I'm trying to think. I mean, for the most part,
it's been really easy.
Yeah, it has. Like, I feel like it's one of those things where when you are headed the right direction, things just flow. Yeah. So when you're headed downriver and you're going the right direction, things are easy. Like, there are challenges. We grew very quickly. Yeah. That was a big challenge for us. We went from that year that Amber was talking about, we went from 17 groups to 53 in a year. And so we tripled, and that was an extreme amount of growth for us to handle.
At the same time, we had some really good people, and we just really didn't want to tell them no because of what we experience every week. Like, we wanted everybody else to experience that. So, I mean, we did tell people no that year, but like we had a really hard time saying no to a lot of those people. And that's why we grew so quickly, because
we are very much so, we'll just figure it out. Mm-hmm. Style of people. Like, we're like,
we can't fail. We're going to figure it out.
Yeah.
So awesome.
Don't ever have like a not, we always have a can-do attitude. Mm-hmm. Like, we're like, well, I mean, so here's this challenge, but we'll figure out how to get
and over. Even working together and not knowing each other, it's been really, it's, you think like, okay, you're going to build this thing with this person that you don't even know. Mm-hmm. But that has also been really easy. And, you know, Madeline will throw out an idea and I'm like, no. Or I'll throw out an idea and she's like, I hate that. It's great because we can just be really honest with each other. You know, we have good character, so there's trust there and all of those things.
Well, and it's a common goal too.
Yeah.
Like, we wanted to be successful. We have a common goal.
Yeah. And there are some ideas that we both have that we're both like, no, this was not good.
Or maybe the kids say it's not good. Yeah. Like, our kids will be like, but yeah, I mean, I guess growing too quickly was definitely a challenge. There's other things that come up, you know, along the way, like having to tell those people, some people know that just aren't a good fit. Mm-hmm. Like, I hate that because I want their children to experience the magic that we experience every week. So that is like a tough part for me when I'm interviewing people. What else? Other challenges. We have, parks have been somewhat of a challenge in some areas. We have a public park. All of our groups get like approval to meet in whatever, some are city parks, some are county parks. There's different recreation areas and green spaces, all kinds of things, but they're all public spaces. I don't know why in some cities, public parks don't want kids, which is so like mind blowing to me. And that is really frustrating. We've run into that quite a few times.
Or we have to jump through like 4,000 hoops to get a group there.
Or they want to charge us thousands of dollars for the kids to be in the park. And we're low cost. It's $150 per family to join for 36 weeks. And you get all kinds of cool supplies. And there's a supply fee for each child. It's $50. So, you know, it's like if you have two kids, you're paying like less than, I don't know, like $6 a week for two kids to be a part of this program. And so we're low cost. So when they're like, oh, yeah, you can meet here for $7,000 a year, we're like, no, our groups don't even make $7,000 a year, you know? So that's been challenging, really frustrating and challenging because it's a public spot. So we just don't understand that. We get frustrated with that.
Yeah, that's a big thing.
That's amazing.
But it's not a lot. I mean, it's just a small handful of parks out of the 100 groups that we have that have been like that.
Yeah, we're just flipping as we go. We've answered many of the questions that are on the slides here, but the pictures are amazing. I mean, it's a sensory path here in the woods. It's each are so different. Like you said, they're in such different environments.
Well, and we do a lot, like for every park that is difficult, which is only a handful, we have parks that are like absolutely amazing, bend over backwards, amazing people that we work with, amazing park systems that we work with that are basically like, what do you need? We are here. We're here for the kids. We're going to do talks.
And we've actually had people like that really want us in their parks, but then the state or the county or somebody else is saying no. So then they're frustrated too.
Mm.
But we do, all of our groups do community service projects throughout the year. And so we give back, like that sensory path that you just saw, that was a community service project that one of our groups put in at their park. And then we do like park cleanups. We do like at my park, we did a mural and we put in new grills for our park. So there's a lot of groups that are doing some really great things at their parks, and not just at their parks. We have groups that go to nursing homes and do like nature activities with residents. We have groups that work at animal rescues and like do highway cleanups and river and stream cleanups, like all kind of anything you can think of really. So we're giving back to the parks as well.
Well, and community service is really at the heart of what Amber and I want to do and what we want our kids to do. We have a really unique opportunity because we do homeschool. And so our hours are different than what a public school family or any other family maybe would be. So our opportunities to volunteer are a little bit more broad. And so we really, really push that on our groups that like community service is at the heart of Barefoot, and we want the kids out there volunteering in the community.
And it looks like here with this gentleman with his board that he's holding up, the bug board, and you have final projects for some of the kids at the end of a unit. Is that, I don't know.
So last year we did a night hike and we did like bugs on a sheet with lights and looked at bugs, like tried to draw the bugs to the light. And we looked at bugs. Well, that was early in our year last year. And we gave all the kids that night a bug board and so that they could collect bugs all year long. And then at the end of last year, when we learned about clay, we made clay bugs. And then the kids could present their bug boards if they made one. And this little boy actually looks like he cut out pictures, but a lot of kids had real samples. And so it was just whatever people were comfortable with. At the University of Kansas entomology program there really helped us dumb down the rules on bug boards and safe collecting and all of those things for our families. So that was a lot of fun to work with them and give the kids a chance to really learn about classifying different species and all of that stuff. So it was neat because it was a year-long thing. So we had kids that were collecting bugs all year long and learning all the attributes of each bug that they collected. And it was really cool. We had a wide range of, I think they're like, I'm looking at this picture and it looks like there's even like some clay bugs on there down on the bottom. Like maybe they put some stuff with clay. And so that's kind of cool. But they were all just so different.
Mm-hmm. Well, I run a group called the Secret Gardens Outdoor Classroom. And there's one little boy in my group that is, he is obsessed with bugs. He just...
Oh, well, we'll send you a bug board. We'll send you one for him.
Yeah.
I love a bug board. Oh my goodness, that would be... I was just thinking, how can I do that? Because he... Oh my goodness. And he gets everybody else involved.
Well, and it's an upper level science project. Yeah. It's a high school level science project. So for our upper level kiddos who are, you know, 15 to 18 years old, this was like a high school level science project that they could do throughout the year. I took entomology in high school. It was a year long project. So it really, on our groups, our older kids and what the bug boards looked like versus the younger kids and what their bug boards looked like, it was really, really neat to see the differences and how in depth it went or which kids loved the bug board and which kids did not. Because right. It's not for everyone. Oh, but it was really, really neat.
Oh my goodness. I could talk to you both all day long. Is there one seed of inspiration that you would like to leave either a homeschool parent, an educator, a teacher, a leader in a community? What would you like to leave with? A seed of inspiration.
I hear a lot of people just like new to homeschooling, or maybe they have been homeschooling, that worry about their kids being behind or worry that they're going to fail their kids or they can't do it or whatever. And so for me, whenever I was wanting to pull my kids out of public school years and years ago, I had somebody tell me, like, you love them more than anybody in the entire world. You've been there from, you know, their first step. You taught them how to count. You taught them how to walk. You taught them how to talk. You've already taught them all these things. You don't become incapable just because they hit a fifth birthday. And so for me, that was like a light bulb moment and really kind of encouraged me to take the leap into homeschooling. And since then, you know, I've had to remind, because I have four kids and they all learn so differently and they all have their own strengths and struggles and all of that. So I've constantly had to remind myself, okay, there is no behind. Like, what does that mean? And it's okay to not follow a schedule and just be curious and wonder. And for me, the reason that we homeschool, it's more about the relationship than it is, you know, the education. The education obviously comes, right? For me, it's more about the relationship. And so if you're only focused on checking off boxes and stuff, sometimes the relationship gets pushed to the side. And so I have to constantly remind myself of those things. And so I like to remind other people because it's so good.
I don't know. That's me. No, that was great.
What are you?
That was great. Well, we can end on that.
And don't stop being curious.
That was what I was going to say, is like, just always take the leap. Like, we took the leap and started this and we didn't know what was going to happen. So just always put yourself out there, even if you think you're bad. And I tell my son that all the time. I'm like, you don't have to be great at everything. And you shouldn't just do things to be great at them.
Right.
You should do things because they're fun and you're curious and you want to learn more. And so, you know, if you're on the fence, just take the leap and jump in with both feet.
Yeah.
And also jump in with both bare feet.
Right.
And if there's not a group that, you know, people want everybody, and especially in homeschooling, you hear a lot of talk about community. People want community. I'm looking for community. I'm looking for friends for my kids. I'm looking for friends for myself. Because if you can't find a program or group that kind of you're meshing well with, it can be isolating. And so that's kind of where I was when I reached out to you on that Facebook post. So if there's not something like that in your area, we can help you create one, but you can also create your own. So don't be afraid to do that. Like if you don't find what you're looking for, make it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love your attitude and your mindset. It's really transformative. And I talk a lot about mindset, and the two of you are just complete models of what you can do when you have a positive, even when you talk about your challenges, it's about, you know, the challenges, looking at challenges as opportunities and just flipping it over and problem solving it out. And so, and then think about all the process of learning in getting to that endpoint. So, oh my goodness, it's so exciting to learn more about Barefoot University. I've been following you two for some time now, and just think what you're doing is absolutely amazing. And I actually loved watching I had known that you were going on this trip with your leaders. And I just think that's such a gift for everybody, really, to acknowledge our educators and what everybody's doing. So thank you.
Thank you.
Again, big question is, if someone was trying to find you, how would they find you? And I'll have all this in the show notes as well. But where could we find you?
We have our website. It's barefootuniversity.org. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram. It's Barefoot University. We are like the only one out there. And so you can search Barefoot University and we will pop up. Okay.
Great. Thank you again for being in the library, stopping on your trip on the way back. And sharing your story about Barefoot University. I know that we are now officially friends. So, and yeah, part of a community. So uplifting.
I love it.
Nature-based education. So again, thank you for the ripple effect of getting this work out into the world and so many people.
We're so lucky to be able to do this.
Yeah, yeah. We feel lucky a lot all the time.
Yeah. And it's a gift. What you're giving to the world and these families, then that's going to extend on. It's a complete gift. So I want to thank you for that. And yeah, it's
powerful. Thanks.
It's really powerful. So
hopefully we are, and we think about it all the time. I will say this, I'll end on this. We think about it all the time, or at least I do, but Amber and I talk about it. We, you know, in one of our groups, because we have so many kids enrolled, in one of our groups, there is going to be the next person who discovers a new species. There is going to be the next conservationist.
There's going to be the next park ranger.
You know, like
entomologist.
Yeah. Astrophysicist, because we're doing sky this year. There's going to be somebody that has never been outside before, that has only been on like a paved path, that's going to go off the path with their family. And it's going to be life-changing and life-altering.
And we get a lot of kids with disabilities, whether it's physical or behavioral or all kinds of stuff. And so their parents also are always like, man, this was life-changing for us because they're off the path.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't have that opportunity before, or this method of learning has really just calmed them or whatever, and challenged them, maybe just all kinds of different feedback about that. So that's also been really good.
Incredible. It's a perfect note to end on. Thank you for joining us for today's episode. Before we sign off, we have an exciting opportunity for educators looking to bring learning to life outdoors. Consider enhancing your teaching journey with the Outdoor Classrooms Teacher Certification Program. This program empowers educators to transform any outdoor space into a dynamic learning environment. By joining, you'll gain skills to inspire students and foster a deeper connection with the natural world. Interested in making a difference with outdoor learning? Visit www.outdoor-classrooms.com to learn more about enrolling in the certification program. Don't miss the chance to expand your teaching toolkit and inspire the next generation with the joy of outdoor education. Thank you for listening, and remember to subscribe to our podcast for more inspiring content. Until next time, keep inspiring young minds.